You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
I'm Calvin, and you're listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. This show is an experiment in civility, gathering people who disagree to sit down face to face and having them discuss their disagreements. Do we ever arrive at consensus? Sometimes. What's most important is we've got the conversation started. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. We are back. Welcome to the beginning of season six.
I have been sitting in this chair for 5 weeks waiting for you to show up.
7 weeks, actually. Okay, 7 weeks since the last time we recorded.
Really?
Oh, my God. It's been a while.
Man.
It has been a while. Since the last time we recorded, the reason it's been a while between episodes is I started a job that was working me 80 hours a week. And it was rough, and I have since left that job. We'll be starting another job that I cannot on air say where I'm working, because they're a large company. But
is that part of the deal?
It's kind of part of the deal.
No,
it's a large corporate company. We talk about things that they probably don't want to be involved in.
Okay.
So,
yep.
But either way, it's been a long while since episodes. But welcome to the beginning of season six. This is season six, episode one.
Didn't we just do one maybe 3 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago?
No, it's been a while.
We did it a couple weeks ago.
Has that episode seen the light of day is the question.
Oh, well, see, right. Now, if you're talking in hypotheticals.
Has Calvin had time to edit said episode?
No. Then that hasn't happened.
That has not happened.
I wasn't here that
People are like, it's been like since, since July? I don't know. But either way, we're back. We're back on air. We've got a long slate of episodes to record. I'm really excited about the topics that we have lined up. But before we talk about the topic we're talking about tonight and the topics we have coming up, Kent, Steve, how you guys been?
Been okay.
Yeah. Been okay, Steve?
I've been okay.
Just okay?
Well, the last time
Both
we were together.
Both
his
parents died?
Oh. Wait, what?
No. That's not true.
Jesus.
Don't even say that. What if that happened?
God,
and
no,
then
I feel
you
terrible.
Stepped in it.
It's like, okay. is he the knight now? Is he avenging
He's an actuarial, actually. It's like the math came up. It's just statistically speaking.
Anyhow, Jesus.
You do insurance, right?
Go on. So what's been going on?
That's it. That's all.
My parents did not die, though.
They didn't. They. Okay. You know what? Yeah. I haven't talked to them today.
Okay.
Thanks, Kent. I'll have to call them when we get done here.
Thing, yep.
I haven't talked to them in at least a day or two.
Kent's humor is so dark. So, Kent, what's been going on with you?
Both my parents.
Jeez.
It's half true.
Not since the show started.
No.
I've been doing a lot of...
Pilates, got
a
it.
Lot of, yep.
Volunteer work.
Giant rubber balls. What have I been doing? Okay, a lot of work stuff, a lot of training for work, classroom. Sucked up a lot of time. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well,
Kent does Ultimate Fighting, in case you didn't know. Kent, so this has been a lot of training lately.
Kent is a cage fighter.
He's a cage fighter. Old school cage fighter, not like this UFC stuff you see now.
Cage fighter body. His body is the cage.
Remember Jon Favreau from Friends?
Gosh. Anyhow, remember Ted Danson from Friends? Also, speaking of Friends. Gotta love this. We're now at the 25th anniversary of Friends. I know. I'm sorry. I'm dating the show, and I'm dating myself. But a couple days ago was 25th anniversary
today,
of Friends.
Today.
Is
My
it today?
Wife told me today.
All right. So
Carrie
if you went on Google
today.
And you typed in Ross Geller, it would show up, and there would be a little couch in the corner. And if you clicked on the couch, the screen would tilt. It would pivot.
Pivot.
And then it would
pivot
the other way, and then it would pivot, and then the couch would break. And I loved it. I love Google. Whoever's behind Google... The people who do the daily things at Google.
It's a mystery. No one really knows behind Google.
Not the guy who runs Google, but the guys who are slaving at Google who are not paid enough for what they do. I loved what they did for the graphic of the day. Anyway, it did something for each Friends. Anyhow, that has nothing to do with the show we're talking about tonight. What? There's Bob. There's Bob. Bob's coming in.
Right. We got to introduce the guest.
We got to introduce the guest.
Because it's topical. Friends, do you take a guess on how much each cast member still makes today from that show?
So
per episode?
So they made
I'm off. Okay, so they made $20 million each episode.
Each year. No, each they're right
no,
now
they
made
$1 million an episode.
Yeah.
They made $1 million episode their last season. So, I'm guessing they make at least half of that.
Nope, they're making each cast member is making $20 million a year every year to this day.
Warner Brothers
is a $1 billion a year franchise.
Jennifer Aniston, call me.
Matthew Perry's in a gutter somewhere raking in money.
So that's neither here nor there. I love that, Bob. Thank you so much for sharing that. But we're going to be talking tonight. As I said, we have a number of episodes lined up
this season. But we're starting off this season talking about adoption. We've wanted to talk about this episode. We've wanted to talk about this topic for the last five seasons and have not been able to do so. Thankfully, we have some guests who were brave enough to come on and talk about their experience, whether going through adoption, being adopted themselves, or whether going through the adoption process themselves. And so I just want to kind of go around the table. Actually, one of our guests is on the Skype line, but I want to kind of go around the table here. Our first guest is actually on the Skype line. Her name is Diane McDowell. Diane McDowell is the founder and president of Training Marbles Incorporated. Diane is a recognized and respected leader in the training industry, specializing in drug-free workplace and diversity inclusion training, consulting, business development, and program administration. Her unique experience is a perfect combination to assist with your team to implement an improvement process. And Diane, you have adopted you have adopted a child, correct?
I have.
And
adopted
did you,
my son when he was 10 days old.
You adopted your son when he was 10 days old. Diane, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Ben and Jenny Regal. They've been married for 18 years. Ben has a master's degree in health administration, and Jenny has a master's degree in math education. Awesome. The numbers and letters should not be hanging out together. They're just going to get in trouble. That's always been my thought. X needs to stop getting lost. I'm not going to find it anymore.
You start the show drunk?
I did not.
Okay.
But Ben and Jenny,
they drunk.
That's always been my thought on math. I'm a history guy. Dates, dead people, places. That's my thing.
X never marks the spot.
Yes. Ben and Jenny they've adopted two biracial daughters, and both were domestic infant adoptions through an agency. Thank you, Ben and Jenny. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
On occasion tonight, I will be reading responses from someone who is not here, was not able to call in, but she did answer all of our questions in email format. Her name is Amy Snyder. She's actually a mother of seven children, two through international adoption. She's a current homemaker and homeschool mom. She also has a Bachelor of Science in Math from Michigan Technological University and an MA in Math from Oakland University. And she's got adoptive children, which is kind of crazy. Not crazy, but they adopted a sibling group. Her and her husband adopted a sibling group, a girl age 7 and a boy age 4 from Colombia, South America. So we'll be reading some of her answers tonight. Unfortunately, she couldn't be here. So we'll move on to our last guest, Bob Waltenspiel. Bob Waltenspiel has been in the information technology industry for over 20 years. He is the co-founder of IT and the D and the co-owner of Podcast Detroit, where we record all of our shows. So he has also hosted a weekly podcast for over 6 years. Was a former 40 under 40. Really? You were 40 under 40?
Damn right.
Cranes 40 under 40? I did not know that. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. He was a 40 under 40 and has done a TEDx talk in 2018. I'm still working to get my way there. He attended Wayne State University where he studied business. Bob was adopted when he was an infant. Bob, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
One of our rare guests who, in this particular case, when you say, turn up Bob's mic, it's literally Bob's mic.
Literally Bob's mic. Yes.
No, right. It was Cranes, C-R-A-N-E-S.
No, it
was a different one.
No, it wasn't Cranes. It was Oakland County. It wasn't
Cranes. Oakland County? Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's Oakland County's 40 under 40. Does that count?
I think
it's fine.
It's good. I'll take it.
I got a little trophy.
I'm not on the list.
A trophy?
Let's dive right into questions. Let's dive right into questions. So, Diane, we'll start with you because you're on the Skype line, but we'll go around the table, of course. Share your adoption journey, whether you were yourself adopted or whether you were adopting children. So, Diane, we'll start with you.
For me, I was not adopted. I made the decision to adopt, had long talked about adopting, and when it came time to be a parent, I chose adoption because I felt that there were lots of kids out there that needed a family, and I wanted to be a parent that adopted. So spent about just shy of a year from start to placement, adopting my son and going through the process of bringing him home as an infant.
And okay. All right. Awesome. Cool. Bob?
Yeah. I mean, I was adopted at birth. I didn't find out until I was about 10 years old or so. My parents were German refugee immigrants, so they were both my grandparents all fled the war. So my parents were literally born in Yugoslavia, tried to get back into Germany, but they couldn't find the family, so it took them like a year and a half by the time they tried. The borders were closed. They came over here. Well, everyone went to Chicago. My dad, my parents both finished high school in Chicago, then moved to Detroit for work. Then my dad joined the military, couldn't have kids, so they adopted me from I think it was Macomb Catholic Services. Like literally, I was 10 days old when they signed the papers, and then I was six. So I didn't come home until I was like 2 months old.
Okay. Is your family is your family Jewish?
No,
I just don't know of another reason to flee. Germany was terrible during the war. I just don't know what.
So there's a whole group of Germans. They're called if you look it up, they're Schwäbisch Deutsch or Schwabian from a region that there's like 700,000 that all went to Yugoslavia. Yeah. Okay. So the Carpathia Club in Sterling Heights, there's like 12 of these cultural centers in the U.S. That helped them with getting their immigration, getting paperwork. But it's a very tight knit group of people. But yeah, no, it's. Like they were all born. My dad was born in Serbia. My mom was in Croatia.
Okay,
And then everyone tried to. You know, everyone kind of scattered after that.
And you didn't have to be Jewish to be considered impure.
Yeah, right.
They just wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. <You
know>? Makes sense. All right, so Ben, Jenny.
Yeah, so I don't know if I should talk, but I guess
you should definitely talk. This is an audio.
Yeah. Like otherwise, it's super awkward.
I'm steal my out. Wife's thunder.
He's
here,
much
but,
more comfortable on the
yeah.
Microphone.
Well, I mean, if we started probably our journey 14 plus years ago when we found out we couldn't have kids, you know, and okay, so it was one of those things where it was like, all right, so that's, you know, that's not going to happen. And so we were like, what are we going to do? You know, and so probably typical classic, like, well, we could do IVF or we could do, you know, we could adopt. And, you know, we had this like, we didn't really know because we left it for like several months, and then we went through the process, came back and said, let's adopt. And
were you in Michigan for this whole process?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right.
And then we spent 2 years probably going through the process. We had a failed initially. So we had like, we followed this lady for like,
I think it was four or five months. No, she
close.
Was like, yeah.
And we did like visits, the whole deal.
Okay.
Covered like, doctor appointments, things like that.
Well, so you knew the potential mother.
Yeah. Yeah, and she was, you know, then she had the baby, didn't tell us, and then, you know, it was just terrible. It was like the worst. Yeah, it was like, it was awful. And then...
did she decide to keep
her child? She did decide to keep the child, but she didn't want to tell us.
She didn't tell us. So.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Right. Yeah, and then we... so we just, like, shut the door. We had the whole, like, my mom was here from, like, New Jersey at the time, and, like, shut the door because we had the whole... Like, the whole baby room is ready, you know? So it was, like, shut the door for, like, 4 months, didn't talk to, like, agency. I'm like, don't call us, you know? Don't call us. And then we got a call, and Ava was our first, and she was what they call a gift baby.
So, I don't know. Explain that for people who don't know, because we don't know anything about.
It's basically, like, her birth mom was going to leave the hospital, and when she was going to leave, she's like, I'm not taking the baby.
Oh.
And so they were like, whoa. So they freak out, right? Because they're like, what? So they got to get, you know, so they got our agency involved. And then it was in the NICU just because they didn't have any other place to put them. They don't have like baby wards anymore, you know? So we got the call in less than 24 hours. We were home with Ava.
And when they call you for that, they say you have 20 minutes to make a decision because this baby is just waiting.
Yeah, I had
and
to,
has
like,
to go home.
It's like one of those things where you get the phone, you're like, you get the call. It's like I'm in the middle of work, and I'm like, I'm not answering this. I don't know who this is. So I hit decline, right? So I hit decline. It calls me right back, and I'm like, jeez. I'm like, hello. And she's like,
what?
So you're getting the call like, hey.
No joke. This is like how it went. And so I'm like, I don't. And she's like, you have to. Here's the situation. You have 20 minutes. You got to call Jenny right now. And I look at my assistant and I go, I don't know where Jenny works. This is like a funny story.
You were married at this point.
She's not really school. It's a long story. But
you know, my wife and I take 20 minutes to figure out what to eat for dinner. And here you are deciding a major life decision.
And we're not even together either.
We weren't.
He's at work. I'm at work.
He had to get her out of school. And I'm like, I don't know. She's at four different schools. You got to figure it out. So my assistant man is calling, trying to figure it out.
Now, let me ask, this could be for Diane as well, just kind of to piggyback on that. Did you know anyone at the time who'd adopted, or did you go in with just what I'd read in a newspaper or saw on television, or did you know someone in your life that had adopted, so you kind of sort of knew what was going to happen?
We didn't have a lot of people I don't think in our lives. I don't know about Diane, but yeah, we didn't have a lot of people in our lives.
Now I know that
Diane, go ahead.
I didn't know anyone. I'm black, and I literally didn't know anyone who had adopted. I when I told my parents that it's what I wanted to do and that's what I was going to do, I remember my mom saying, I'm not shocked because you've said since you were about eight that you wanted to be a gift to a baby and to adopt a baby. And so, but no, I went in completely blind. The adoption agency guided me through the process, and it was a long, exhausting process.
Bob, do you know anything about your parents' process? Did they share anything about their process at all?
No. No, we didn't. Something we kind of never really talked about a lot. I don't know. It's kind of weird. My mother gave me the packet of materials when I was in my early 20s to just kind of say, hey, if you ever want to go down the journey and find your birth parents, here's the, you know, the papers. And I was like, meh.
Like, honestly, I'm good.
Just didn't care. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, okay. We never really, yeah. They didn't. They never talked. They never talked about how they got to America. Like those stories are pretty much lock and key. They came in with $40 in a crate. All those, like, I'm hearing stories now in my 40s about, you know, the journey, and but like the adoption thing. Yeah, we kind of never talked about it.
Okay, Ben, I was just going to follow up on something you said before when you. When you said that Ava is your first daughter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you said she was a gift baby and you had 20 minutes to decide, adoption has the – and I'm sure it's based in reality – has is stereotypically, I guess, extremely expensive. Do gift babies have that same list of expenses?
Yeah, it's the same.
It's the same. Okay.
We were just ready.
Okay.
And in our case – at the time, this may have changed, but there was 27 families or couples waiting to adopt.
Oh.
But there were only 3 that would take non-Caucasian.
Wow.
There's that. I mean, no joke.
We'll get to that in the second half of the show for sure.
So it was us. So there really wasn't many options.
Okay.
Like, in their mind. And if they don't place it, they have to place it into a foster situation, which is fine, but they don't want
to
do that. They don't want
to
do that.
I think Calvin's still envisioning gift baby as like it's delivered to you in a
store.
Yeah, like, oh,
it's an actual store.
In a box with packets of peanuts. And,
oh, man. I'm just telling you, like, my wife and I don't want to have kids. So like a gift baby showed up and be like, what the fuck is this?
So this was a – so you were the first people on the list. If you hadn't been able to do it, they would have gone to 2 and 3.
They would have just started,
and then it would have been a foster home?
And then it would have been a foster situation.
Okay.
Gift baby can be – sorry, just
– No, go ahead.
Any uniformed person can just drop off a baby, like that. That is the kind of like that is most often the case.
Mm-hmm. Classic firehouse.
Yes, yeah. You can. Yeah. That is legal. You can just drop the baby and they'll take it and figure out where it should. Like so, that's why a gift baby. There's not very many. Usually 2 or 3 a year.
Okay. So to those to those people on the panel who were adopted, what would you say is the most rewarding thing about having been adopted? I mean, I would think it's getting a family, but if you yourself adopted, what was the most rewarding thing about going through the process?
Diane, we'll defer to you.
I the most rewarding thing for me, my son is 23. He just turned 23 this week, and the one thing that I have always said, and my spouse and I have always said is that if I had given birth, I would have given birth to this child. I mean, for me, it was just a different delivery process. And for me, you know, going through it and all that we, you know, went through to adopt him, the reality is that we have an amazing son who happens to look just like me and he happens to act just like my spouse. And so it is the child that I was meant to have, and so it was a beautiful process, and his life is, and our life is better as a result.
Bob? Not very similar story. I was the most rewarding thing is knowing, you know, that my birth mother at the time was 15. What kind of life would I have lived? Would I have, you know, I have no idea. Would I, you know, I definitely wouldn't be the same person that I am today. You know, knowing that I went into a house and a family where I was loved and accepted with open arms and without reprehension, and with parents that wanted me, that were, you know, in their early 30s, that, you know, were mature enough to take care of me and, you know, give me a, you know, this typical middle class Warren, Michigan home with the middle class life and, you know, public high school. I mean, yeah, I was, you know, just knowing that, you know, the life that I live today is because of that. You know what I mean? It could have been 1,000 different ways, other, you know, and I'm really happy with how things turned out. And
did you say you you never went down the road of finding your birth mother?
I made the call like 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
And I told my mom once, and she was like, "Oh, okay, Bobby, I'm supportive of you." You know, and I was like,
"Are you really?"
I did just spit into the Ancestry DNA thing today and mailed it in.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
Now Utah has your information.
Just so you know. I know.
You're a clone now.
Mr. Libertarian. Yeah.
I don't trust that shit.
I didn't either. Mr. Anti-Government Libertarian. Yeah, I just sent the government my DNA. Oh, well.
They already had
it.
It's already had it.
They got it. So Ben and Jenny.
Ooh, I'm going to defer to Jenny on this
one. Yeah, Jenny, I'd love to hear your perspective on this.
I think for us, it's just obviously when you struggle with infertility, that's kind of your hope and dream, and you spend years thinking that that's a possibility. So kind of on the other side of Bob's story is to be able to have children, to be able to raise a family. And I think also for us, because our children are transracial adoption, there's just this element of learning something outside of yourself and becoming something that you weren't before. So I feel like in a lot of ways, some of it is from the next question about difficulty.
Right. And we'll get into it even more on the back end of the show. It's like, are you okay with this?
Yes. Right. As much as I feel like I am creating, I'm creating little human beings that are going to face the world. They're also creating kind of a new Ben and Jenny. And that's an interesting thing that I don't think every parent gets to experience as well.
So. It's interesting that you say that because, you know, again, Amy Snyder, I said I was going to read some of her responses, and her response to this question, I won't read the whole thing, but she says, at this point, 14 years later, actually, I'll just read the whole response because she is religious, so I don't want to take that out of the equation here. But she says, my faith in God's plan for me was increased through the adoption process. We saw God work out difficult situations and provide things that looked impossible. Also, we thought we were going to be making a difference in the lives of two children who didn't have a very bright future. Now, bear in mind that she adopted two children from Colombia. So, however, at this point, 14 years later, I will say that the real blessing is the difference that the adoption has made in my life, not my kids. Kind of like what you were just saying there, Jenny.
Exactly.
Many families could have adopted them, and they would have been blessed. God had adoption blessings for me that I did not know about. I have had to grow in ways I never imagined, and I would not trade that process. Now, I'm not religious, whether you're religious or not. I think that kind of would have been the process, but I will give her experience, and so that's what she attributes it to. But either way, you still see her children are affecting her more than she feels like she's affecting. I mean, obviously she's affecting her children, but kind of to the sentiment you were just putting out there.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what?
Yes.
You bring these kids into your home, you create that home for you, you become a family, and you feel like you're pouring into their life, but they're also pouring into yours. And years later, you're like, wait, hold on, I've been changed by this process. So that's really kind of cool. So let's move forward, Steve. Next question.
Sure. Kind of the opposite of that coin. If you were adopted, what is the most difficult thing about being adopted that you remember, if you can remember the process early on? And if you adopted, what is the most difficult thing about going through the process for you? We do a Diane again to start with,
Let's start with Bob. Yeah.
I mean, the only difficult thing is every time I go to the doctor and they ask family history, I say I'm adopted, right? And so like the...
And I didn't even think about that. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
you know, so, I mean, that's one of the big things now. I'm in my mid 40s. You know, health and life is starting to creep up on me, and I have no idea what I'm proposed for. So that's kind of one of the reasons I did the whole DNA test thing.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't, you know, it's the not knowing where you're, you know, from, but I mean, it's amazing.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah.
Well, no. Are you sure you ain't black?
Right. It's like, no, but it's, you know, I've run into and I've met, like, it's funny, my best friend that I've known since I've been 15 is adopted, and we're like casually brought it up, you know. So many people in my life that I just casually talk to, like, oh yeah, me too. And that's kind of the end of the conversation. Like, you know what I mean? Like, none of us, you know, whatever, keep, you know, want another beer? Okay. You know what I mean? There's, it's not really that difficult. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, I couldn't even imagine, like, just, you know, like what you said, being black, like, not knowing where you're, like, from. Yeah, it's got to weigh on you a bit, but at the end of the day, I'm here, it's today, what am I going to do?
Right.
So, move forward.
Understood. Diane?
I think difficulty, I mean, early on, the adoption process, you know, what a lot of people don't recognize, and this may be an Ohio thing, but I think it's kind of uniform across the board, is that really while the child has been placed, the finalization doesn't take place for 6 months. And so during that process, you know, you take for granted things like, oh, we're going to go on vacation. Well, you can't take the baby out of state without letting the adoption agency know, because technically you are fostering that child until the final placement. You know, so those were some of the difficulties early on. It was just the process. The process is long. It's an expensive process, but I wouldn't trade that process for anything. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Not for me and not for my son.
Okay.
So I should probably speak to this one since I alluded to it in the last question.
Don't go too far into it, because we're talking about it on the back end as well. Like the second half of the show, I definitely want to dive deep into this question. But yes, let's touch on this.
I mean, some of the difficulty with adoption is that there's a huge process to adopt. And sometimes, you know, you're sort of at that time in life, you're surrounded by people who are just getting pregnant, and their stuff just seems so like, oh, I'm pregnant. The
like
baby's coming. I guess we're here we go.
Yeah, exactly.
And for us, it's like, oh, I have to be background checked. I have to be tested for AIDS. I have to be
house visits.
Hmm. I have to make sure that I have a working fire extinguisher in my easy to reach areas. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody else has to go through that stuff. And so you're
no one has to have a bank account with X number of dollars in it and all that other stuff.
Everyone's just popping out kids, and here we've got this 6 month long process, and somebody has to get very personal with you. I mean, I have two printouts, because we've done the process twice, of somebody else's perspective of my life after interviewing me. And that's just a very
or the worst. Awkward. Like there's like this questionnaire you have to fill out. And it's basically like, well, will you take a black child? Will you take a trans, you know, and it literally goes through, will you take someone who might have smoked during pregnancy or taken crack or taken like.
Okay, so.
Like you have, you can literally say no to all those things.
Let's pause there for a second, because in my research for this episode, because again, we haven't done an episode on adoption until today, I didn't necessarily know what questions to write. And I was like, what? Googling tough questions about adoption, right? And there was a video that came up from BuzzFeed, and it was these couples, you know, male, female, single, not always couples, but single, gay, straight, whatever. And they're going through this questionnaire, and you would see this husband and wife, or this husband and husband, or this wife and wife, going, will we take someone with severe mental retardation? I don't know.
Is it cleft palate?
The mom to be was like, I'm a good person, but I don't feel like I have the capacity. So that's interesting. I mean, I thought that they were just doing this for the BuzzFeed video, but that's actually something you have to
that's
go.
Actually okay.
You got to be really honest with yourselves, or you're going to end up in a weird spot.
Okay.
Like, you're going to end up in a really bad spot where you're like, oh, yeah, we can take a black baby, and then you're like, you realize your whole family's racist, like that, like or just like you yourself, like so you have to be really honest. So that's it's tough. It's not easy. Hmm.
Calvin, that's the same thing when you're having a child. You know, I got three kids. You go through that conversation. I think in the first trimester, if you know, checking for Down syndrome. I don't know what the test is called exactly, but just then you have to have a conversation whether or not you want to carry it through the term.
Okay. Diane, you seem like you want to get some words in there.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things, not only, you know, you have those selections, like, you know, I think the toughest thing for me was the hierarchy in the adoption system. And I don't think a lot of people recognize that the most desired baby is a white male. The least desired baby is a black male. And
Bob's here giving a thumbs up like, yeah, that's me.
Well done. You won the lotto.
Shut up, Bob. Right. But you go know, on, Diane.
There is a hierarchy, and it's daunting. It's almost one of those ones where you go, wow. I mean, babies are literally categorized.
Yeah.
So you look at it and they ask you everything. Are you willing to take this? Are you willing to do this? And I agree, you have to be very honest with what your capacity is, and you have to be very honest about your life and what you can and can't do. Like, for me, I know and knew that I'm not certain that I could raise a baby that had mental retardation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was one of the things for me. The other one was I could not raise a baby with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Hmm.
So for me, I had to be really honest and make those decisions. But literally, it's a, you know, it's a checkbox. You go through the questionnaire and you're checking them off like, nope, nope, yep, 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 nope, hmm. nope, no. I mean, it's yeah.
Wow.
Now, the three of you have had a little bit of space now, but between now and when you adopted, do you think, looking back, was the process, do you think, was it child-centered? Or was it bureaucracy-centered? Do you think it was all the hoops that you had to jump through? Do you think in the end they were for the better of the child? Or do you think some of it was a lot of red tape that you think is unnecessary when it comes to what's important for that child that's involved?
I mean, I think they're ultimately trying to place the child into a good home. I don't think any of the agencies are not trying to do that. It's just I don't know. There's these preferences people have, and so it's like this weird kind of.
But it is kind of helpful because it did prompt conversation that I think you have to have, because if you're going to accept something, A, you need to both be on the same team about that.
Right. And it was interesting. To this point, it was interesting watching this video. And for those of you listening to the episode, and those of you on the episode, I'll actually when this episode posts, I'll actually post a link to the BuzzFeed video, because it really is quite interesting, because there was one point where it got to the question specifically of severe mental retardation, and it was a gay couple, two gay men, and one guy was like, yeah, I just couldn't. And the other one said, well, that's where I come in, because that was actually the work that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could do this, so we can do this because we're a team. And so it was really interesting to see that. So I guess
it's very brave.
A question that comes out of that is, when we talk about, hey, you know, we're in this together, what are things that you feel like, and this is off script here, but what are things that, and Bob, I want you to jump in on this as well, like maybe your parents had disagreements on things, but what are some things that you feel like maybe your strength is in and you're lacking in, or you're lacking in, and your partner is strong.
Are you
trying
to start a fight?
No. But that you would say, okay, this child that we might bring into our home has this issue, and only one of us is good at it. Would that be a deal breaker, or would that do both of you have to be good at taking care of that particular issue, or would you say at least one of us is an expert in this thing?
Well, so, I think one of the things that plays into this is that you may check these boxes and it may sound like I know exactly what child I'm getting. But the reality is it a lot of those things depend on what the birth mother decides to share.
Right.
Okay.
You don't really know. They think they might know that she was drinking alcohol, or like, you don't really know. Like, that's the thing I think is we got on Ava, we got almost no information.
You got 20 minutes notice, sure.
Yeah. But even if, you know, she was in the hospital, but she didn't, like,
we didn't,
it's not
meet
like
the
we have
mother,
this, like,
so,
deep history of what, which does she have mental illness in her? Because that's one of the questions. Do they have mental illness in the family history? We don't know.
And it's she may not know either. Yeah. She may not be in a space of life where she can be properly diagnosed.
Gotcha.
So some of that stuff is, like, if they can figure that out.
Now, Jenny, you had previously mentioned the process that you have to go through, a deep dive strip search of every facet of your life by the agency. Did you find that was true the second time? Or did you
the process is exactly so
same.
You're
even a year later?
Yes. You're
Well, that process, like, if they found that you were like a total fuck up, would they like take away the first kid? Like, I don't know how that works.
That's a good question.
Hopefully we'll never have to worry.
Thankfully we didn't have to find
first
out.
First the plane crash, now this. Damn you, Kelvin.
No, all of your stuff is only good for a year. So okay. Suppose you were waiting and you didn't have a baby, after a year, you would have to redo your entire process.
Our situation's like not normal. You can't go in the, at least most services, you can't go with, you have to wait a year to even apply again. Mm. But we had a situation in which we ended up with another baby 9 months later, which is ridiculous. And I wouldn't suggest it for most people. It was crazy.
Might have been easier.
They're 9 months apart.
The Irish twins, as my people say.
Are they related to each other? Same birth mother or no?
No, no relation.
Different birth mother. No. Okay, all right. Gotcha. All right. Diane, any thoughts on that or we'll move on?
No thoughts.
Okay. So here's a question, and maybe this should have been the first question. I don't know. Or the second question at least. What are the hurtful, dumb, or ugly questions that people have asked you about being adopted or adopting? Now, I know the answer to some of these because I Googled them, and I was like, I'm not asking that question. But what are some of the hurtful, dumb, or ugly questions that people have asked you about whether being adopted or whether adopting?
I got to dive into this because I get this one almost. There's a 90% response rate when I say I'm adopted. I get, really? Are you kidding? Like, and I got to stop for a minute. I go, no, I'm totally making that up and joking. Like, of all things that I would say.
Yeah, I'm gonna make
why would I joke
about
that?
Is that a thing going on in elementary schools of joking that you are adopted? Is that, I mean, where does this come from?
I have no idea. It's the strangest response. And no one just says, oh, okay, cool. Or, you know.
I did ask you why I didn't, like, I've known you like 3 years now. I'm like, how am I just finding this out? We've hung out. We've drank quite a bit together. I'm like, oh.
You didn't notice his tattoo? They all tattoo it?
Yeah, adopted. No, adopted a bird. No, but you did say it's not something that comes up in casual conversation. No, well, right.
So, once in a while, like something will come up, and it's when it's pertinent to the conversation. Like, I'm not just going to go, you know, I'm not like a vegan CrossFitter that went to U of M, right? I'm just going to blurt it out in public.
Right.
Or a lawyer.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it just, you know, if it comes up and if it makes sense in the conversation, I'll bring it up. And then that's the 90%, that's the response.
Yeah.
Really? Are you kidding? Huh. No, I'm totally making that up. Like,
Bob, I meant to ask you your mom's genetic history. I thought that was
I'm glad I didn't do that because when I did send out a mass email. For those of you who don't know how our show works, if you've been on the show before or you have friends, I generally send out a mass email to people who have been on the show before saying, hey, you've been on the show. Here are some topics coming up. And I sent out the list of everything through December. And Bob emailed back saying, hey, I'd love to be on the adoption episode. I was adopted. I was like, fuck, I mean, like, I've known you for like 3 years. But thankfully, I'm glad it wasn't like, are you serious?
Are you serious?
I didn't think you were joking.
He's a funny guy.
Diane, your thoughts. What are some hurtful or dumb or ugly things that people have asked you?
You know, I can't think of any truly dumb things people have asked. I am married, my spouse and I, to a female. And my
see, I wanted to ask you that, but I wasn't sure if I should ask. But thank you. Brings a whole new dynamic to things.
It does. I mean, we've been together, and we are interracial couple. Our son is black, and we've been together. It'll be 24 years coming up, and you know, people will. The double take is almost just like what Bob said. Really? Is your son adopted? He looks just like you. And I don't know. I mean, but other than that, you know, sometimes just insensitivity. But for the most part, I think the people around us have been really fantastic and supportive and all of that with us and with our son. And yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, you get some really dumb stuff. I mean, we had, I think especially in the
give
process,
me the greatest hits. The greatest
oh
hits.
Oh, my gosh. One in particular. One in particular is like I brought Ava like when we first had her to like my work, and some lady started telling this horror story about how her, you know, her friend had adopted, and then like it got taken away. No joke. We're in the process of this process where our baby can get taken away.
Right, your fears are raw, right?
Yeah,
now,
I was
right?
Like,
thanks for talking about that.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Was it Calvin?
Sounds like something I would do.
It was unbelievable. My friend Janelle just looked at her and goes, what are you doing? It's like, they don't know what to say, you know? So it's like, I don't know. What are the other some?
It's interesting because I ran an infertility and then adoption support group. And so there was one time where we just went around the table and said all the dumb things that people said. And we're like, we need to write a book about that. Because you could. Because it's all the stuff like, oh, where'd you get them from?
No, it's classics one.
From
like,
Michigan?
You're going to adopt, and then you're going to have a baby right away.
Oh, yes. As soon as you adopt, you're going to get pregnant.
Because that happened to some person one time. They're like, well, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. People ask expecting parents. Like, you know, I have three daughters, and each one was a surprise. We didn't know what we were going to have. And the question always came up, what are you hoping for? Right? And we're just like, I just have a healthy kid. Like, what do you,
not hoping a dog? Like,
you know, this kind of – so when I was seven, I saw one of the greatest lines – or I heard one of the greatest lines on television, but I didn't know what it meant at the time. And it would have to, it was on Punky Brewster, my initiation into adoption, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everybody. It was this line that she was getting made fun of about being adopted, and she turned around and said
– Wait, live-action Punky Brewster or the cartoon?
Live action.
Okay, just so we're clear.
Slim Moonfry.
Yeah,
the only a cartoon.
Said something along the lines of, well, my dad had to fight for me. Your dad kissed your mom on the cheek and waited around for 9 months. And I thought, I didn't know what it meant, but I thought I knew instinctively that was fantastic. And it took me years to figure out what that meant, because I was seven or six over the time. But I thought, that's amazing. What a great response.
So hold on. Amy had written in on this one, which I think is interesting. She said, the worst when our children. Now, again, Amy wasn't able to be here, but she has what I would, coming from divorce background. Being divorced, my parents are together, but blending families, right? That's how I think of these things. So I'm sorry if I'm using the wrong vocabulary here, but she says the worst when our children are all together, because they have biological children and they have adopted children. When our children are all together and people ask us which are our real children, quote unquote real children, mm-hmm. No joke, how insensitive is that? They are all our real children, some born from my body and some from my heart. But I honestly don't see them differently, no matter how they arrive in my family. I hate it when people make distinctions between my kids, and it's even difficult to answer some of these questions here because of the verbiage of biological versus adopted kids. So even in the way I'm phrasing the question, I'm like, oh, shit, I've asked the question wrong. And Amy, thank you so much for at least saying that. I apologize. I'll do better next time. But thank you also for the candidness on that one. That seemed to be the one that I found most on the internet. Like, which ones are the real kids is – like, what do you do in that situation? Like, oh, but you were an only child, and your two adopted children are your only children. Diane, do you have any other, your son's your only child, right?
Yeah, okay. He turned three, and that ended the quest for a second baby for us. Yes.
Not two? Not two?
Yeah,
late bloomer?
I mean, we were ready to go through, and we had actually called the adoption agency, true story, and he turned three, and it was like, who and what just happened in our world? And I remember calling the adoption agency and going, yeah, no, we're good.
We're good.
It's going to be an only child.
Take us off the list.
No. Yes, absolutely.
We're going somewhere else. But, hey, that's all the time we have on the first half of the show. We're going to take about a 5 to 7 minute break, and we will be back. All right, everybody, we're back from break. Let's jump right back into questions. So some of you have chosen to adopt cross-culturally. Two of you. What led to the decision to adopt children from another culture rather than from your own culture? And what have been the questions you've had to ask of yourselves that you otherwise might not have had to ask? And so obviously this question is more so for Jenny and Ben. What was that process like adopting children who were black and you were not? And what are the questions you've had to ask?
Do you want to start?
Sure. I think it's like a realizing that it's for like family, it can be overwhelming. They don't really know what to do.
Like your family.
Just family, yeah. And I'm not going to call anyone particular. I just think it's they have to get over the fact that it's like, whoa, what is this? And you're like, okay, and it's not like always said. I think it's more unspoken. But then you also like for Jenny and I realize it's like this inventory of they do this exercise where we do. I remember this. We would like had to take the we've done it a couple times now, but it's like they take a jar and you have to take.
We have
little,
two kids, so that makes
beads.
Sense.
Well, no, not that.
These are like training, like transracial training.
So okay. They take you have to take this jar and you have to take like these beads and there's like white colors and multicolors and you have to take. Well, okay, so take a bead for what's the neighbors on each side of you, and are they white or are they?
Yeah, what's their ethnicity? And you put it in your.
What about their? What about your doctor? What about your pediatrician? What about
your sister?
School teacher. You know, like, and so then you like. if your whole
and then you place
the whole jar is white, then you're like,
you
well,
place
we
your
live
child
in
that and say, okay, how yeah. do you think your child feels in that cup?
So it's like trying to realize you. We have to be super intentional in our, you know, in our world, like to find a black doctor, to find a black therapist, to find, you know, that none of our, unless our friends have adopted, which we have a ton of those, but I think most people, most white people aren't thinking about. And so there's that. I think you have to, we didn't, I don't think when we thought, well, of course we have to do this. And we, part of it was like this, we saw the numbers. 23 of the 26 couples that are on the waiting list were only doing, would only accept a Caucasian baby. And so we were just like, we can't do that. That was almost my thought, at least, like, I can't be one of those. And but then you do it, and then your realization of, like, this is way different. We're going to have to be way more intentional about this.
Yeah, you kind of think, oh, this isn't going to be that big of a deal.
You know, I'm
we're
glad
pretty
you,
open,
I'm glad you brought
people.
That up, because one of my questions would be, how do you introduce a child, whether they're black or from Colombia or wherever they might be from? How do you introduce...
They can be black from Colombia, just so we're clear on that.
Just so we're clear. absolutely. But how do you work in, I guess, elements, cultural elements that you are just completely foreign to in order to, you know, allow... The, you know, it's, you don't... All right, so I don't know if I'm asking the question, but I think I'm asking the question. Like, how do you...
You can't fake it.
Yeah.
So they realize I can never recreate
right.
that other culture, but we can expose them to people that... in our circles, in our friends' circles that are like, that can do that.
And I guess the question, like, so full disclosure, this show, my background is African-American history. Mm-hmm. You were at the dinner where we met, mm-hmm. and I talked about that. But this show, sometimes I feel like I'm like a little bit more militantly black than I probably am in like real life. I'm like, I am. Like, black issues are mm-hmm. paramount for me. And when it comes to things that white people pay attention to because they are in close proximity to other black people, I often wonder, and for your specific case, if you had not adopted two children who didn't look like you, would these issues at all be on – would you – not would the issues be on your radar, because the news is the news. Would you care to the degree that you do?
No.
Now, like when you hear about like black people being shot by the cops, would you
I mean,
be like,
I care,
"Oh well, you know, what was he doing?" Yeah. You're like that kind of deal.
I
like,
care,
what,
but I think I don't think you take it personally. Okay. You're just like, "Oh, that's horrible. I can't believe that's happening in our world. Somebody should do something about
like,
that."
And Diane, I do want you to weigh in here, but I'm like, yeah. Okay, you're a black mother of a black
Diane
son.
Diane said that. Her wife is white.
Yeah, but I think about the fear of a black mother of a. Sending their black child into the world,
yeah.
Do you share that same fear that I'm assuming Diane has? Because my mom has that fear about me. Diane, do you have the fear of sending your black child out into the black world, into a white world?
Absolutely, without question, without pause. But what I can say, and I want to say two things that I think are pretty important.
Okay.
One of them is that when I look at cross-racial adoptions and I look at parents who are white that have adopted a child of color, I actually am of the opinion and belief that they work harder to expose that child to its culture than black families do. And that's been my observation. That's been my experience. Okay. And I so appreciate that because, you know, my blackness is with me, right?
Yes.
And my spouse is white. And, you know, just a quick story. So when she would leave and she would be with our son, who is, we always call him our milk chocolate baby, and he is. And
milk chocolate is the best chocolate, by the way, just so we're clear on.
The best.
I like the dark, but that's fine, Kel.
You know what? You're wrong on that. You were wrong.
We can talk about
this later. You're objectively wrong.
Dark chocolate's the best. Go on.
And milk chocolate's best. Go on.
Shut up.
But the thing is that, you know, she would get, like, the double take, and she would get the look, and
mm-hmm. yep.
she would like, is that your child, or what are you doing with this black child? And, you know, and looks that I didn't get when he was with me. And the other piece of that is when I look at it, you know, when he was getting to that age of being where he was going to be driving, we had a lot of conversations that even went into arguments about how we would teach him to interact with the police. And, you know, her thing was, I don't want him to be afraid of the police. And I don't, that's not how the world should be. And for me as a black female, I had to say, but I have a responsibility to teach him how the world is.
Right. That's right.
And so
prepare them for the world you want to be, but train them for the world that actually exists as it is.
Absolutely. I mean, and so there, the dynamic is there, and it is, it's tough, and it's one of those things that, you know, I think every parent looks at, you know, their kid in the world, but I think as a black mother of a black son, you know, there have been moments that have been paralyzing, and they just have been, and so it's tough.
So I got an interesting take on this. I got my bloodline, and I'm 50% Polish, and then a little bit Germanic, Hungarian, like just kind of up and down, you know, kind of that area. I was born into a German immigrant house. My grandparents didn't speak English. My parents spoke half and half. My only option was to be, I'm German, right? If you know me now, I host Oktoberfest.
I was going to say, it sounds like beer.
The German Marksman's Club. I believe you've been on some episodes club. About gun control on our show. Yeah,
yeah, I travel to Germany as much as I can. I keep in touch with family. That there was no option other than to be a German child, a German American child. That was it. Like I took it in high school. I passed it on to my daughters. They were in German dance, with the cultural clubs when I was growing up. That, you know, my wife's 100% Polish, legitimately. Her parents immigrants, almost same.
Okay.
Coming over here, so like our kids are half German, half Polish. Like that's just how it works. That's just how it is. Regardless of me being adopted or not, like that's what I tell the world. Hmm. And there was no other out there in my eyes. There's no other option. Hmm. I don't know. It's because of, you know, if you look at my dad, like people always say, like, you guys look like alike. You know. Having green eyes, does that help? I don't know. Like just because I resemble what I'm supposed to be, does that? I don't know. It never really occurred to me. I just know that was my only option was to be was what I am.
Yeah. It feels like though there is a difference obviously built in there, in that a Caucasian culture versus another Caucasian culture versus a different race. In this case, if two white parents raise their kid black and their black child grew up as like, I'm white. This is my culture. I'm white. You know, their parents never kind of exposed them to black culture.
It like seems the movie, like the movie Elf, right? It's an elf,
right, yeah. Sort of. And I don't know. And it feels right. It feels like a big difference between two Caucasian cultures versus black and white, because it feels to me like it would be for two white people to raise a black child as white. It feels like it would be
unfair.
Yes. Absolutely. Whereas I don't see, I have no, like, there's nothing in my stomach gurgling when I hear about, you were raised German. Yeah. You are German. Yeah. And I feel to me like, yeah, I get that. You know, that makes complete sense to me. I don't feel like there was any problem with that. But if you were black and your two white parents raised you as like, well, we're,
we're French.
As Caucasian as you can, culturally speaking, whatever that is.
Right.
It seems like that would have been what's the word I'm looking for? A malpractice, and when it comes to being a parent of a child that is a different race, it feels like completely different.
Last week I met she's originally from South Korea, I believe, raised by British parents.
Hopefully she's from South Korea. That's a better Korea.
Right.
That's the better Korea.
But she was she was raised by British parents, and she wasn't raised. She was raised British. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all she
knew. I think the elf thing is actually perfect.
Right.
It makes
right.
complete sense.
I'm an elf. You know, like,
look at me. I'm an elf. Of course.
No, you're not. But, you know, it's just, again, this is my family. You know, so I've taken on every aspect of it, regardless of of origination.
I think I think the unspoken, especially for Jenny, because she gets this more than I do, but – there's like this, and white culture doesn't understand like hair, like in the black culture, and so they don't understand.
Have fun braiding.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and but I the other thing was
before I had
yeah,
my children,
is that because she they could see. She get judged like, well, are you doing their hair?
Yeah, my oldest daughter is very tender-headed.
Okay.
Very.
Me too. That's some rough stuff.
Yeah.
So or people so just touching
there,
the hair.
There were things that I was like
touching, but if they weren't, if the hair wasn't done, they would be like, "Oh, you're not. You don't know what you're."
Yeah, my child would fight me on doing her hair, and then I would have to go somewhere, and I would be in panic, like somebody's going to see my child with this like undone hair. And I would have anxiety about walking around with my child that just tantrumed for 2 hours because she refused to get her hair done.
And then we
now
like,
it's on me.
And then we take him to like the salon.
The white mom who doesn't understand the black kid.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
right?
Or the culture, right?
We got asked to leave a salon in Midtown. No, there's no joke.
not
too
by
loud.
Our stylist.
It's not Nefertiti.
Her
right?
neighbor
it's
stylist.
Nefertiti. It is Nefertiti. Was it Nefertiti? Oh, Nefertiti. You're on blast, Nefertiti.
Well, see,
our
stylist
the only
is
black
great.
Place I could think of in Midtown.
Okay. Yeah, that is a problem. So I have daughters, and it, sometimes, especially when they were younger, you had to fight to do their hair.
Yeah.
And if they left the house with undone hair, nobody judged me for not knowing how to raise my child. Everyone's just like, well, just a kid. But
mom's probably
I
tired.
Never, but I never thought exactly as being a parent of a black child that is like, well, she's just a bad parent because she doesn't know how to understand her child. Like
or
that could be a whole new thing.
And
I
or
didn't
she doesn't
think
understand
about
her culture. That's
exactly.
Like the bigger thing.
Right,
it's
right.
Like, you don't understand her culture.
Yeah.
Ken, let's move the conversation forward. Let's go to question eight. According to National Public Radio's Morning Edition, non-white children and black children in particular are harder to place in adoptive homes. So the cost is adjusted down to provide an incentive for families that might otherwise be locked out of adoption due to cost, as well as for families who really have to maybe have a little bit of prodding to think about adopting across racial lines. In other words, there are often altruistic reasons for the discrepancy, but people who work in adoption say there's one more reason. Quite simply, it's supply and demand. In other words, when it comes to adoption in America, is there a race-based cost differential? Adopting black kids is cheaper than adopting white kids. For those of you who adopted cross-culturally, considering questions of race when it comes to your kids, what are your thoughts on what this says about the value of a black life?
So I'm going to respond, but in a different way.
Yeah.
At least in our experience in Michigan, that is not the case, but there is a nuance here that should be talked about.
Okay.
Most likely they are referring – there's a difference between like the adoption system and the foster care system, and adopting through foster care is a whole different experience and is free basically. Like, right?
Yeah, out of foster care system
is free. There are some fees, but it's
so when we say like minimal. We went through our like agency, that is not – there's no difference in cost, just to be clear.
And I think some people
at least in the state
don't.
Of Michigan. I don't know if there's other places, but at least here, there's definitely not a difference in cost. I don't know what Diane's experience was.
In Ohio, there is a difference in cost. I mean, for me, and again, I'm going back 23 years now, to adopt a black male, it was right around $4,000 to adopt a biracial male was right at, I think, $5,000. There was literally a price on each, and the average for a white male was $15,000 to $20,000. So, and we went through a private adoption agency, but there was a difference in cost in there, and it has to do with, you know, that it is supply and demand, and you know, when you look at it again, they are in this the way the system looks at babies that are available, literally there is a hierarchy, and so when you look at that hierarchy, there is a cost differential that I looked at when we adopted our son.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, if I read this, available adoption situations is a graphic of just costs. African-American baby due any day, $17,000 plus legals. Biracial baby, girl, due August 18th, $22,500 plus $2,500 in legal and medical. Biracial, baby due September 15th, $30,000, right? African-American girl due, $17,000. Biracial girl due, $25,000. African-American girl due, $17,000. African-American boy due, $17,000. Biracial boy due, $30,000. Caucasian baby due, don't know the sex, $28,000. So a little bit lower than a biracial, but still in the same vicinity. African-American baby due, $17,000. Caucasian baby due, $29,000.
I cannot be the only one who's confused. What are you saying about due? I don't know what you're saying.
Baby due. The baby is not born yet.
Oh, okay.
So it's due in April.
So they're trying to match you with a birth mother.
Okay, so yeah. So you got babies that are about to be born, and I don't know the difference between a baby that's about to be born, the cost of a baby about to be born, versus a baby that's already been born in the system for a while. But what seems to be borne out is that there are states that have cost-based differentials. Not all states have that. Like Nevada doesn't have it. It's like based on how much you make. But there are many states that have a cost-based differential. Like, hey, the demand is for white babies. You said there were, like, what, 27 white families that wanted only white babies? And you're like, there were only three that wanted black? That were like, hey, we're willing to take, right? We'll take whatever. And I don't want to say whatever, but whoever, right? Because they're human beings. But when you look at the numbers, the raw numbers, you're looking at, yes, there's an incentive. Hey, we got black children who were not being adopted, or they're not the desired people to be adopted, so we're going to lower the price. So then cost, maybe we can get two babies. Two for BOGO. I don't know. That seems terrible for children, right?
Do we?
I'm
not going to do that, but go ahead, Diane.
If I looked at, you know, and again, I'm talking 23 years ago, so if you amortize the cost to today, that'd probably be where it is. But one of the things for us as a lesbian couple was the adoption agency knew that we were a lesbian couple. And one of the conversations was about the fact that in Ohio at that time, they were okay with us adopting a baby, but only one of us could be on the birth certificate. That was their way around it.
Okay.
And so
you're a single mom essentially.
Essentially, okay. Absolutely.
Does anyone on the panel know how these costs or how they are derived? How do we come up with $8,000, $12,000, $17,000, $32,000? Where are those costs come from? Because I think from the outside looking in, if you know nothing about the system, the idea is, well, they're just trying to get away from terrible perverts from just adopting children for free.
But
at the same time, where actually are these costs derived from? If anyone on the panel knows,
it's all
for sure.
The agency.
Well, the truth about it
is legal.
Let Diane hop in here because again, you're on the phone, so it's harder for you to get a word in edgewise. Go on, Diane.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So I mean, a lot of the cost. In my scenario was the private adoption agency, and then there was a cost for the attorney. And remember, there's always a party that is assigned to each person. So I had a social worker, my son had a social worker, the birth mom had a social worker, and their role is to work on that person's behalf, right? And so you basically have three social workers that are assigned, and then you have someone from the state that's also assigned, and then there's the legal piece of the puzzle for when the adoption goes to court and is finalized.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's the piece of it. If you do a private adoption through not through an agency, you do have to hire two lawyers, one to represent the birth mom and one to represent you, because they cannot represent both.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have the adoption agency has to obviously advertise so that birth moms can find them. They counsel the birth moms to make sure that, why are you choosing to do this? Is it financially? Can we find resources to help you financially support this child if you want to make that decision? Because they really want to make sure that these birth moms are committed before they set you up with a family, because failed adoptions.
No such tests for biological children.
No.
But failed adoption is probably the thing that's like not talked about mostly. I just have a friend right now going through trying to do a private. She's had two failed, and they're terrible stories.
Hmm.
and she's potentially doing.
But you don't share them right off the bat, do you, with your friends?
No. I can talk to about her
first time. You're adopting. Would you like to hear some?
We can talk because we've had it, but like, I bet the average is it's about one or more per adoption try. You're going to have a failed.
Which I would say. Now, did you feel that way? Like maybe somebody might feel a miscarriage. I mean, was that kind of how the emotionally how it felt?
We didn't have a miscarriage, but I don't know.
It felt pretty horrible. I have to mention.
I don't want to think about that. So let's I want to dial down on the question about the actual value, which sucks because we're in a obviously. We talk about race a lot on this podcast. We met over talking. I mean, you know, Ben and Jenny. We met over talking about the book Stamp from the Beginning, which is about the history of racist ideas in America by Abram Kendi. Great book. If you haven't read it, read it. But actually, that's how Bob and I met. I was on a 4-hour episode of your show talking, and most of my ideas that came on that episode were from that book. So either way. I think we haven't drilled down to the question of when you look at the cost differential between a white baby and a black baby or a white baby and a baby of color or the line out the door for white children versus black children in the adoption system.
I didn't even know that was a thing with the cost differential. My mind's kind of blown out.
Yeah, it was mine. I mean, I wasn't surprised. I shouldn't, like, cry over this. I'm not that surprised. But I'm still surprised because we're talking about babies and children, right? But – when we think about this thing, what does that say about the actual value of the life of your child? And I'm not saying we should put a dollar value on the life of Ben and Jenny's children or Diane's children by any means. But
let me like, hold on. About
here's the actual value of a life. We're like, okay, you are cheaper. Your life is cheaper than the life of this European-looking baby. What does that, as a parent, say to you?
No, this is really stupid because if you go into this thing and you check the box that you want a Caucasian baby and it's $32,000 and then you look and go, oh, well, hey, a black baby, $17,000, we could save 15 G's. Let's do this. Like it makes zero sense to me. I understand like lemonade stand economics, right? If it's $3, you might buy two. If it's $2.50, you might buy three.
It makes zero sense to you, but they have the kids whose lives literally cost less.
But they didn't do it to save money.
I know they didn't do it for – I know they didn't do it for – I'm assuming you didn't do it for those reasons.
Right, ours didn't cost any less. Let's be clear on that.
Okay. All right. So yours didn't cost any less.
But even
so,
if it had, I don't – I mean, I think the hard truth –
But this does exist. The hard truth is it exists.
Hard truth, it clearly exists. But, I mean, the hard truth is that there's just not enough on both sides adopting black children.
But, I mean, what Bob's question still stands, though – who out there would say, I would never raise a black child? Half off? I would raise a black child.
And the reality is, do we want them raising black children? Yeah. I mean, I want somebody who has checked the box that's willing to do the work. Yeah. I want them to be the one raising. So it's like, I hate the thought of incentives because I only want the committed.
It doesn't
please.
Make sense. That's the thing. Like, it's not like you're going out to get dinner. My joke earlier was BOGO, but it's like, hey, half off. Like, hey, let's get two black babies. Why not? We can do for the price of one.
Well, okay. Right. So, got a great deal on this kid.
Right. I'm thrifty.
It does.
Well, you don't even – I don't know if there's another side. Even the foster care, there'll be whole, like, message boards around. It's Juan, and he's 13, and he likes these things. And he needs to be adopted.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of older kids.
Tons
kid
of those.
Yeah.
Well, they have TV commercials for that all the
time. But, like, you go through the list. Like, that is constant.
I think it's care.com or something.
Yeah. Actually, the movie, which was sensationalized to a degree, but what was the name of that movie? New Family. Instant Family.
Yeah.
With Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah, with Mark Wahlberg.
It's worth watching. It's based on a true
story. And Mandy Moore, who, interestingly enough, adopts children. Oh, no, she doesn't. She does adopt a baby in This Is Us as well.
Yes.
She adopts a black baby in This Is Us, which is great.
It's worth
– Well, it would be more interesting if it was Mandy Moore and not Rose Byrne Because it wasn't Mandy Moore.
It wasn't
no.
Mandy.
No,
oh, not,
it
was not
Rose Byrne.
Oh, my bad, my bad.
Felt like we were on
well,
the same
Mandy Moore
here.
Does adopt a black
she
baby
does.
In This Is Us,
and
then
love
her son
synergy.
Grows up to adopt a black child. But anyway, Kent, next question. Sorry.
So let's touch on something we rarely touch on this show, and that's race. Adoption is not something that is generally valued in communities of color. Essentially, minorities are often the ones who are adopted, but not the ones who are doing the adopting. Why do you believe this is, and is there anything to be done about it?
And I wrote this question specifically more for Diane to jump off on. So, Diane, jump in for that.
Yeah, you know, I think there are a couple things, and this is my opinion, right? And so I think, one, there is the socioeconomic factor. And when I look at the black community, and this is not to say that everyone in the black community is, you know, on the lower end of the economic scale, because we know that's not true. But the reality is that I think there is the socioeconomic piece of the puzzle. And so even for black couples who have done well, you know, they're making good money and all of that. You know, $14,000, $15,000, $20,000 is a lot of money, right? And so when we look at that piece of the puzzle, I think that is a huge piece. I think another piece is that there is a cultural norm or a cultural preference of raising your own. And so you get into that whole mindset that I'm not raising someone else's child. And I think that is very cultural. I think that is part of the black culture. And I think that's part of the issue. And it's not, like I said, when I started talking about wanting to adopt, I didn't know anyone around me who had adopted. Not anyone. I mean, black, white, period. I didn't know anyone. And so it was a process for me where I was walking into it blind. I had people that asked me questions. Well, are you only doing this because you're a lesbian? No, you know, there are sperm banks. I mean, there are. And so that's a cheaper option. I'm doing it because it is the choice that I have made. And, you know, it has nothing to do with it. So I think it's a thing. And I think the black community in particular puts a blind eye to this as if the problem doesn't exist. And it is a huge problem, and it is a problem that we need to solve.
Now, I know you need to hop off the line here, because I know you need to get going. But we're going to ask the last question. Steve's going to ask the last question. But I want you to answer first, because I know you need to leave. But I'd love to get your perspective on this. And then if you need to leave, you can hop off the line. We'll have everybody else in the studio answer. But Steve, go ahead and ask the last question.
Yeah. Next week, we will be discussing the topic of abortion. We chose to discuss adoption beforehand so that we could hear from people who have chosen to do so or have been adopted themselves. Whenever abortion is discussed or debated, it is inevitable that adoption will be mentioned as the caring option, quote unquote. As someone who was adopted or someone who chose to adopt, what are your thoughts on adoption being pitted against abortion as its direct opposite or alternative? Should people considering abortion first consider giving up the child for adoption, or is this more of a talking point?
I personally, it frustrates me, and I do have to say first and foremost that, one, I am of the opinion and belief that the only people who should be in the discussion about abortion are people who have adopted or fostered a child. I think no one else should be in the conversation. Why? Because these are the people who are doing something for the kids that are here. That's my opinion. The other piece of that, and the reason I think it's more talking point or smokescreen, is that people want to turn a blind eye to the reality of what is happening. And the reality of what is happening, if we go back to the socioeconomic, you can't cut welfare, cut aid, cut school funding, cut all of these programs, and then say, but I'm pro-life. Because essentially, no, you're not. So for me, it's a talking point because it is an easy escape so that people don't have to deal with the hardcore reality of what's actually happening. And, you know, there are babies out there, whether we're talking about newborns or we're talking about kids who are 13, 14, 15, who need and deserve a family. And so when you look and you say, well, you pit that against abortion, it's, for me, we have a lot of conversations that are either or, and the reality is they're not either or conversations, they're but and. And so the reality is we don't want to have tough conversations, so we throw up these smoke screens about everything else because it's easy. That's my opinion.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I loved what she just said, because I think it's so true. I think the one thing that I would say is there's trauma, whether it's abortion or adoption.
Huh.
There is, and that's the thing I think I didn't even understand until we've been in it, that there's trauma. Like that, our kids have basically PTSD in different forms, and they were both infant adoptions. But either way you swing it, if there's abortion, there's going to be trauma. If there's adoption, there's going to be trauma. And we have to, like on this side, we have to pick up the pieces of that. And that's good. We're doing that. But there's 16,000, I think, kids in ready to be adopted in the foster care system in Michigan.
16? How many?
I think there's 16,000, right? That's what Nate says.
I think so.
You can fact check me on that, but that's, I believe, what the number is.
Well, from busy on Thursday, though.
From being born to 16, from 18 years old, yeah, I can see.
And a lot of those are going to age out, and then what do they do?
Yeah,
and so
own,
these,
right? Yeah.
I think it's very, like, I'm not very political, but I would say it's like what she said is, it's very true. It's like, well, we're pro-life, but we don't want any of those other things.
we don't want to actually take children into our lives.
But there's trauma.
Give them good lives.
Our kids are, I would say our kids are never going to be normal, whatever that is. And they're not. Like, they've got their own issues.
Well, let me read Amy's response to this, because hers is a little bit different than what's been said. But and I can tell where she's coming from, because I've been here. But she says, please, please, if you are considering abortion, consider adoption first. Our two children have been such a blessing to us, and they have given so much to the world. Many adoptees have contributed so much. If they had been aborted, our world would have missed out on some beautiful people. This is not merely a talking point. It is about children's lives. I also pray that those women who find themselves in a difficult place and are considering abortion, that they would have wise, caring people around them that can help them through the decision and the process that follows. So you see her position, but you also see some grace there. Jenny, your thoughts on this? I mean, obviously Ben spoke, but I'd love to hear your perspective on this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I know numerous, obviously having done an infertility support group, as soon as you, I mean, for me,
I'm not asking you to come down on, are you pro-life or pro-choice? I just want thoughts on this question, so sorry.
But, you know, just knowing people who are in the process and longing for children, it is hard as somebody who can't have children to know that other people have the choice. So there's that element of like, oh, you get the choice. I didn't get the choice.
Right.
So there's that kind of element that comes into play. I do think it's being the caring option, that term. I mean, I go to a adoption support conference and our joke is #blessed. You know, because the reality is you are raising children who have, some have been through trauma. And so there's just
all,
this element
all have been through trauma in some
they've
form.
All been through
but
some
more
type
than
of.
Their son, yes.
And so to label it that way just to make a point is not realistic. I mean, I can see where people are trying to make an argument against abortion, and I understand that. And you know, as a personal person who would like that choice, I don't have that choice of whether or not I get to have kids. I don't know.
So are you pro-life or pro-choice? No. That's, okay.
People want to know. People who listen to our show, all four of them.
No,
so they demand it.
Yeah. Bob, thoughts on this? Or
I just want to thank my birth mother because, you know, because I'm here and I'm having fun.
You're like Ronald Reagan. Like, I notice all the people who are pro-choice happen to be alive, happen to have been born already. Exactly. I get it. Understood.
I'm just happy I'm here.
But I do want to thank all of you for being here and thank you for engaging, engaging all the questions, but engaging that last one. Because as I said at the beginning of this, next week next week we are talking about abortion. And normally if you do a series like this, it's abortion and then adoption. And I wanted to do adoption and hear from people who have skin in the game. Because most people who do talk about this kind of thing are coming from a background of you are a talking point. Your life is a talking point.
You become recruited into an argument that you didn't even know was happening.
The trauma that you and your family have gone through is a talking point that people aren't willing to have skin in the game on. And so I wanted to hear from you. So next week when we have people on, we're like, whatever. You know, I don't see anybody adopting. I'm like, well, last week we had a bunch of people who were either adopted or have adopted. But regardless of what your views are on the answer to this question,
you wouldn't be able to be sitting in this studio.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, Bob owns his studio. If he had been aborted,
none of us would be here.
Yeah, there you go.
None of us would be here. But I do want to thank all of you for being here, Diane. Thank you for calling in. I know you got to get going, so you're more than welcome to hop off the line right now if you need to. But
she's gone already.
Oh, yeah. She's gone. Okay, super. Well, thank you, Diane, for being here. If you listened to when we actually post the episode on Thursday, thanks for being here. Thanks for those of you in studio for being here as well, being vulnerable enough to answer some pretty tough questions. Thanks so much for our listeners. Thanks so much for listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. Make sure you check out our website, leadingquestionsnow.com, where you can find all of our episodes from this season and the previous five seasons, and bios, calendar of upcoming topics, and even suggest topics for us to talk about. If you're interested in bringing our program out to your college, university, or organization, email us at hello@leadingquestionsnow.com. We'll get back to you. Don't forget you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and, of course, the Podcast Detroit app. Please leave us a review. That's very important.